Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Dave Stoop, Dr. John Townsend, and your phone calls today at 1-800-229-3000.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I love listening to you guys.
I'm kind of in a valley as far as my faith. She has a tumor on her lung, and she's in kidney failure. And my question is, how do I tell her that she's dying?
In the court systems, teenagers usually have a lot of ability to say where they want to spend their time.
Change is not what you say. Change is what you do.
Do you ever disagree with him to his face?
Very rare.
Here's what I think cremation is. It is a dust acceleration program.
You're going to go forward. You're going to do the next right thing. You're going to sin no more. And he's going to have to sit with that.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here, and you can join us at 1-800-229-3000. Joining me in the Laguna Beach studio, I'm at WQME up in Anderson, Indiana, Dr. Dave Stoop and Dr. John Townsend. Hi, guys.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve. Hey, everybody.
You guys doing all right there?
We're doing great.
Yes. Very good. We miss you. We wish you were here in the studio here with
too.
Us.
We always have a better time face-to-face where we can see how strange each of us look.
We can enjoy each other's craziness then.
Hey, you know, the last time we were together, and by the way, this is the second day of my new year, and I hope for many other people, because I always celebrate New Year September 1st. To me, it's more of a new year, more of a transition time. And I hope some of you have stuck to your New Year's resolutions for at least one day.
Why September 1st? Because of school and everything, or the fall?
Yeah, everything changes. You know, you go from summer to schedule and school, and it just seems like there's a bigger shift. Whereas when it's New Year's, you kind of are in a same kind of stuff going on.
It's winter both days, the day before and the day after.
I think you can be motivated to change.
See, he's in the Midwest, you know, and that's when the women's put September 1st, they put their white shoes away and they don't wear them anymore.
So do the men, most of the
men too. Yeah, I mean, there are some traditions back in the Midwest and the Northeast about
big change
September 1st. Yeah. I grew up there. I know.
It's true. Hey, you guys, the last time we were together, there was a lady we were talking to that had this deadly combination of extreme dissatisfaction in marriage, and then there's this long-lost lover that comes on the scene. Do you know of a more deadly combination than that to kill a marriage?
I've seen some marriages killed by that, and it's devastating.
Mm-hmm. I tell you, you got to be ready for it. You better talk about it. Class reunions, things like that.
Facebook is a big offender on that because
it is.
Your old classmate that now is feeling lonely finds you, and pretty wild.
We just need to be careful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that God's solution is always you don't stand up and fight temptation. You run the other way.
There you are.
Like Joseph ran from Potiphar's wife. Like Joseph ran from Potiphar's wife, and you move back in toward that relationship that seems so hopeless, and you dig underneath
you
to where the relationship
it, yeah.
is.
But it is, you know, we do get, it never says anywhere in the Bible, James, Genesis, anywhere, Proverbs, it never says to fight temptation. Mm-hmm. It says run.
Flee, flee, flee.
Yep.
Well, and when you think about it, it is the only real way to deal with it, because if you don't flee, that other person is always going to be better in your head than the person you're living with. They're always going to be the ideal. Mm-hmm. The other person is going to... So the only way you can do it is run from that other person.
Here's the second part, though, Steve, is people flee and then they say, well, then I'm just going to have to settle for this empty thing.
Oh, yes.
But God is in the business of bringing love and growth and intimacy back to marriages.
I mean, if I have to settle, then I'm not going to run very fast.
I'm not going to run very fast.
Well, here's the way you spiritualize it. Well, this is just going to be my cross to bear.
Yeah.
You know what? No, your cross is your attitude.
Right.
You need to deal with that. Yep. All right. So maybe God had you tune in just to hear that conversation. You're struck with awe, shame, guilt. Maybe it's time to talk to somebody about that.
But stay for the rest of the show, too.
Yeah, please do. We'll be back after this.
At New Life, we are passionate about helping people experience recovery. And it's no exception when it comes to recovery from the addiction to drugs or alcohol. We are very grateful to have found what we believe is the premier facility to offer a Christian 12-step model of care. It treats the whole person and offers biblical values as the foundation for treating the mind, body, and spirit. Our partner in drug and alcohol addiction provides exemplary medical and psychiatric care, as well as Christian-based psychotherapy, pastoral counseling, biblical studies and meditation, educational groups, worship and prayer, and a Christian 12-step program. The approach is non-denominational and guides the patient to experience freedom through a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you or someone you love is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. That's 1-800-639-5433 or go to newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
Hey, we're back. Let's go to the phones and let's talk with Bob. Bob from Boston, Massachusetts, W-E-Z-E. Hello, Bob. Hello, Bob. Let's move away from Bob, and let's go to Angie from Los Angeles, California. KKLA is the station. Hi, Angie.
Hi. First of all, I want to say thank you so very, very much for taking my call, and I want you to know that your ministry are the angels here on earth helping so many people, and I just pray that everyone continues to send whatever amount they can to continue to have you on the radio, because I know you have saved me and many people that I refer to your program. So
thank you, Angie.
May God
thank you.
Continue to bless you.
Thank you.
I have a question, and I appreciate you taking the time to answer it. I've been married 41 years, and the last six I've been separated. My husband left to have an affair.
So sorry.
It turns out in counseling, the affair went on for almost 3 years, and then I wasn't aware of it. He just kept saying he had to work on himself and that he had issues and he was angry at me. And I went into Christian counseling, and he eventually started going with me when I found out about the affair, and that ended. And he's never moved back in. He moved in with his parents. And basically what he has is projection. He was verbally abused as a child by his parents, specifically his mom. And he continues to project everything on me. And just 3 weeks ago he said he's done. He wants nothing else to do with me. And my question is, she keeps telling me I need to get unstuck, and I've tried to go on with my life the best way I can. We have grown children and grandchildren, so I spend time with them, and I have, women friends that I do things with. I'm not interested. He says he doesn't want to divorce me. A month ago, he bought me a new car. I never asked for anything, and he continues to support me, and I just don't know what to do anymore at this point. Mm.
Well, I'm so sorry.
What has your counselor suggested, Angie?
She said that I just need to move on, that it wouldn't have mattered who he married, that the issues he'd had would have came out eventually, and that he's finally coming into his own, and that he has a difficulty in differentiating between me and his mom, that everything she did, I'm the complete opposite. However, I'm the one that's he's taking all his anger out, and that there's no way of knowing if, you know, he'll ever be able to grasp it.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to divorce me. But he doesn't want anything to
Doesn't sound like he's really left his parents or his mother. Tell me a little bit about the anger you feel.
Well, he's angry at me.
No. Your anger.
Oh, my anger?
Uh-huh.
Do
you ever get angry about this?
I have. But not to the amount she said I should be angry at.
Okay.
I'm more hurt. My issue, she says, is abandonment. And I also suffered from post-traumatic stress through
But see, when you can't move on unless you grieve what you've lost. And it's not just him you've lost. It's the whole idea of marriage, the whole idea of an intact family, a whole lot of things. And grieving, the anger in grieving is a protest. It's saying this is wrong. And saying it, you know, with determination. And women have a hard time doing that because I've watched women try to be angry, and they'll be angry for about 10 seconds, and then the tears flow, and the sadness overwhelms any feeling of protest. And somehow you've got to be able to protest this, not to him, because that doesn't do any good, but to your counselor, to you, you know, in a journal, somewhere where you get in touch with that, you know, beyond the hurt, to the protest that the hurt stirs up. And you can't move on until you can really protest the wrongness of all of this and the hurt of all of this.
Angie, you're feeling lots of stuff right now. What are the feelings about that when Dave said that?
I wish I could find the anger. I have tried, I think, to be more understanding. And she explained that what he was doing was with the affair was rebelling. That he was doing obviously something that he shouldn't be doing, but he was rebelling, and that it was being like a teenager, out of control.
Mm-hmm. Let me deal with you for a second. When you said, I wish I could deal with the anger, I'm going to give you a little sentence. I don't want you to fill in the rest of the blank, Angie, okay?
Okay.
I'm afraid that if I get angry, the following will happen.
I'll be.
Do me give you a menu?
Yes, please.
All right. I'm sorry you're feeling so bad. Should we just sort of be with you instead of tell you stuff to do? I don't.
No, please, feel bad. Please. I appreciate it.
All right. I'm just sorry it's so hard. Let me give you several things in a menu. You just kind of say, well, it's this or none of them.
Okay.
I'm afraid if I get angry, I'll be a bad person. I'm afraid if I get angry, I'm being unfair. I'm afraid if I get angry, I'll get really, really angry and be over-angry. I'm afraid if I get angry, people I love will leave me. If I get angry, I'm afraid that I'll just go into a black hole.
Any of those connect with you?
It was all of them. The first two, not the third one, but the fourth one. It was all of them that I would be you bad. They wouldn't love me, and that it's not fair, and that it's not being in a godly way.
Okay. Let's go back to God here, because you mentioned godly. And the Bible tells us in Ephesians to be angry and sin not. Right?
Yes.
Well, God gave us anger, like Dave was saying, to separate us from evil and to separate us from bad things. We're supposed to say, no, that was harmful. That was hurtful. It was bad treatment.
That's why God gets angry in the Old Testament.
That's why God gets angry.
He's separating himself from the evil of mankind.
And the reason you called was, I feel stuck with this limbo, crazy marriage situation, and you will stay in limbo, Angie, and not have the fulfilling life of friends and ministry activities and health and kids and grandkids and all that, until you can say, this was wrong, and I'm right for feeling wrong. And when you do that, life gets unstuck. That's where the energy is. That's why it's good for us. I wrote a book called Leadership Beyond Reason, where I have a whole section on anger and how it helps us, and we're going to send it to you. But this is what you need to discover. Deal with those fears that you identified three of those things, and take those to your counselor and say, I need this to get me unstuck so that no matter what my husband does, I can have a full life.
Okay, Angie. Angie, go ahead, Dave.
And let's send her the Forgiving the Unforgivable, because it talks also about the role of anger in forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Can I pray for Angie for a second?
Please do.
God, we just lift Angie to you and the pain she is in of being unloved after so many years, and ask that you'll bring the husband back. But even if he doesn't come back, that you'll bring her the health and the closeness to you and the joy that she needs. In your name, amen.
Amen. Amen. All right, let's talk to Becky from Colorado Springs, Colorado, KGFT. Hello, Becky.
Well, hello there.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I have looked forward to this for several weeks now, and I'm glad I was able to get in today.
So are we.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
Did you plan this for several weeks?
I have planned to call you, and I did call you one time, and I had to wait till some other day, and I didn't remember how. I was like a week or two away, and I got busy, didn't write it down, so I missed that. So here I am again.
You know, we've been hanging around waiting for Becky to call for several weeks.
I feel fulfilled now.
I feel fulfilled.
Well, listen, it's good for me, so I was happy to wait. My question has to do with how can I love my brother who has chosen to pursue living as a woman. My siblings and I are now all in our 50s, and this is something that he revealed to us about 2 years ago. Rocked our world. I am the only Christian in the family, siblings and my father, who's still alive.
Let me switch your question around. Why can't you love him?
I can. I can from my end.
Well, you said, how can I love this brother? So,
Well, how can I love him where he knows that I love him?
Okay, what's the problem you see?
Well, he doesn't think that I love him because I haven't accepted him as a woman.
Have you hugged him as a woman?
No, because he lives out of state. We don't live in the same state.
Because, you know, I go to a church where our pastor had counseled a guy for 2 years and then didn't see him for 6 months. And one day this woman comes up to him in church and says, "Remember me." And he looks at him and goes, "Oh, my goodness, that's, we'll say, Bob." And he reaches out and, seeing him now transformed into the body of a woman, hugs him and says, "I'm so glad to see you again." That's the kind of church I go to. There's no question in this guy's mind that the pastor doesn't approve of what he's done. They were together in counseling 2 years. But it's just all about showing him love and care and concern, even though he has done this, even going through consequences of things like this without a judgmental attitude is going to be even more difficult for you. Because this isn't going to make everything perfect in your brother's life. He's going to hit some bumps, and to not be judgmental, that's going to be even tougher.
Oh, I got an idea.
All right.
Becky, why don't you say to him, "Tell me how you'll know that I love you." In other words, anytime somebody says, "You don't love me, you don't accept me," then we go into this whole mind-reading game. Like, how do I throw the darts on the board to hit the right place? Make him responsible and say, "I want you to know that I love you. Tell me how you'll know." And see what he says.
I think he has answered that, and that is to now call him by the new name that he has.
I would do that.
That's difficult for me. In my mind, that almost seems to acquiesce to what it's not just acquiesce, but
to confirm
what he has done.
No. I agree with you.
Am I not also compromising?
We deal with this all the time on the program, Becky.
You're not compromising.
You took a stand, and I agree with your stand, and we agree with your stand. It's not right, okay? But once you take your stand and you've had the difficult conversation, you go to their weddings, and you love them, and you hug their babies, and you call them Sally or whatever he wants to be, because that is a way of saying, "I care about you. I've taken my stand." You're not acquiescing to anything. He changed his name. No. If he'd have changed his name to Billy, you'd have called him Billy. He changed his name. You're keeping your stand but loving a guy.
Hey, do you see this as any worse than adultery?
No.
Okay.
Well, actually, I don't know if I compared the two.
Okay. Well, I don't think it's worse than adultery. And when Jesus was with someone who had committed adultery, I mean, you know, he essentially said, "Hey, they don't accuse you.
I don't condemn you.
I don't condemn
but
you
it's,
either."
But it's different because she was repentant. I'd see Becky's point that he's saying,
Becky, he knows your position, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Okay.
No, he does.
So then you have no need to reinforce that or to restate it because
or to say it a million times.
You've made the point, and he knows the point. Now I'd say to him, "Okay, I'm going to call you Sally. It's tough for me. It'll take some getting used to. But I do love you, and I'm going to call you Sally or whatever her.
So then am I being stubborn on my part not to do that? Because I said I'm not. I can't call
yeah,
him
you're,
by
you're being
new
stubborn,
name,
Becky.
Not, he doesn't want me to call him by
Becky,
his old name.
Becky, you're being
so,
stubborn. Yes.
So I'm calling him by another name that he said, okay, you can call me by that name.
You're calling him you. Hey,
no,
you.
It's a neutral.
I disagree totally with you, Becky. You're being stubborn. Go back and say, you know what? I've been thinking about it. I took my stand. I'm a Christian. I have different beliefs. But I love you. And whatever you want me to call you, I'll call you. You know my stand. I want to get my brother back. What could be more redemptive than for a Christian who holds on to good values says that to a brother? What kind of a message is that? It's a message that Christ is for everyone.
That puts the burden on him. And now it's your problem. See, now it puts it back to where he's got to deal with whatever it is you
said. He can't say, I've got this judging Christian sister anymore. He's got, she loves me. She comes to my parties.
What do I do with that?
What do I do with that?
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come right back for more of New Life Live. We'll talk about it.
I wish I was who you think I am. The one you thought you married. The ideal husband, the amazing dad, the great lover. But my mind is filled with darkness, with images that I can't erase. I want so desperately to be the man you dreamed of, the man I know I can be. I am terrified to talk to you about this, but I want to. I need to. I want us to be close just as badly as you do. Can I talk to you? Can we be totally honest and know that we love each other enough to be open?
At New Life, we've helped thousands of men just like this find hope, healing, and a plan to move forward with their lives through our one-of-a-kind Every Man's Battle Intensive Weekend. Call us right now at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
I need help. I want help. I can't do this on my own.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, this is Stephen Arterburn from New Life Ministries. We know that Christian counseling changes lives. We hear evidence of that every day.
I feel like I'm a person for the first time in my life. I feel like I wasn't whole before or that I couldn't enjoy life. I had such a big weight on my shoulders that I had nothing to look forward to. I'm such a better wife, and I'm a better daughter, friend, a better worker. I feel absolutely free.
Our nationwide network of licensed Christian counselors means there is help available near you.
If anybody is considering Christian counseling, then they need to do it. They need to take that step.
You don't have to be stuck where you are, but you can't really expect to change unless you take action. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. It could be the start of a whole new life for you. Christian counseling works, and we can help. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE today. Someone who cares is always there at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
We'd love to hear from you if you have a question or comment. Call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to New Life Live.
We are back. Steve Arterburn here. And, you know, I hope everybody understands that we're not confused about the issue.
No, but it's a done deal, and
right.
You know you can't fight the reality.
Yeah,
you know what I was thinking about. You know, as long as she's fighting with that, he's got this judgmental sister. And he never has to deal with the reality of what he's done, and she accepts him as a believer, as a person, knowing that she doesn't accept what he's done, but loves him. That's gonna have an impact on him in some way.
Yeah.
And that's the stronger position as a believer.
I remember when my middle brother was about to tell me something really shocking I didn't know. And I said, listen, I don't care what you tell me. You could even tell me that you're gay and I would still love you. Mm. And he said, I'm gay.
Mm. Yeah.
So I had to make a decision. Okay, so what do I do here?
Mm-hmm.
Well, did I want a relationship with my brother or not have a relationship with him? And I wanted a relationship with him, and we had argued over this issue so many times that he knew exactly where I stood. I hugged him. I said, I will always love you. Just don't ever even worry about that. And when he contracted AIDS, he came to live with me because he knew I loved him.
I remember that.
It the whole thing speaks to the nature of the gospel. That's what this is really all about. Are we telling people, you guys who don't know Jesus need to get your act together without Jesus?
Well, get your act together so we can like you and tell you about Jesus.
As opposed to, maybe we need to be Jesus for you, and maybe you'll find him, and then other things will happen. Well, we can't get the cart before the horse. The gospel is the gospel.
But this is the way God loves us. And you go to Romans 5, it says we were his enemy, we were sinners, we were rebellious, we hate him. But when we were in that position, he loved us and sent his son to die for us. So he loved us in spite of our sinfulness.
Just as I am.
And if he hadn't, we wouldn't be believers today.
Mm-hmm. So the responsibility of the church is not to yell at everybody and say, get your act together. No. The responsibility of the church is to say, we want to connect with you and bring you Jesus.
Yeah. Well, and then everything that you do, you got to ask yourself, what is it that you're wanting? Are you wanting to express Christ's love, or are you wanting to feel more comfortable yourself? Or, you know, is it about you, or is it about the other person?
You know, in Galatians 5, Paul writes, he says, what is important is faith expressing itself in love. Mm-hmm. So he's saying if we have faith, if we believe in Jesus, we express that faith in love, not in judgment.
Right. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, also, Steve, when you mentioned the woman caught in adultery and I said that she was repentant, I checked it, and it doesn't say she was repentant, so I was wrong about that.
No, I thought she was. After you said it, I thought,
she was totally wrong. Jesus knew her heart. She didn't have to say anything.
It's just that it doesn't say she said, I want to keep doing this as the right thing. He just said, go sin no more.
Right.
So it was a good point you brought up.
Really?
Sort of.
Really good point. Theologically, great point.
Okay, let's go to Chris from Baltimore, Maryland, and listening on WAVA. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
How could we help you today?
Unusual question. I have a brother-in-law who is sort of a narcissist, and he's sort of done a lot of damage in my marriage, and I pretty much told my wife I don't want anything to do with him. So he won some money in a church raffle, and I guess his wife, who's sort of separated from him, said, give it to my daughter for her college. It's like $5,000 in a raffle. And I know it sounds silly, but my concern is I know he's very manipulative. He's a user, and that and my mother was sort of like that. And that my concern is that at some point she's going to feel obligated and he's going to, you know, like use her in a later time.
Are you asking if she should refuse the gift or not?
Yeah, I guess, because she just turned 18, and I'm pretty much taking care of the college expenses, but I guess it is up to her, because first he has
Chris,
my wife,
absolutely, and absolutely have her take the gift.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
I said absolutely, and then I said absolutely, and I'm going to say absolutely, have her take the gift.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And here's the reason. This is going to be great training for her as an adult to deal with manipulation, because you're going to have a talk with her and you're going to say, you know your uncle, you know, we love him, but he's really narcissistic and he tends to manipulate just like your grandmother does, my mother, and I'm going to change those generational curses and help you be a gal who stands up and nobody can manipulate, and you're going to be a righteous, healthy person and all these good things. And so in 5 years, when he says, I need something back for that car I gave you, I want you to look in my face and say, gosh, I can't do that, Uncle Jim. And you'll be training your daughter.
I thought it was a gift.
And you'll be training your daughter how to deal with the world. It's a tremendous launching your daughter into adulthood experience. What do you think, man?
Okay.
I totally agree with you. I think you miss her having a car that you don't have to pay for, and you miss a great, great training ground here. And then I would also add this, that there might need to be a conversation between dad and uncle about any expectations.
Okay.
I don't know. I think that empower her. I think let the daughter and give her a script that if something comes later, say, oh, I thought it was a gift.
Stand up to her uncle. Oh, my goodness.
That'd be the best thing she could do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate all your...
We'll send you how to have that difficult conversation that you've been avoiding, to help her have that difficult conversation that you've been avoiding.
Ask him to pay the taxes on it also. We'll be back right after this.
At New Life, we are passionate about helping people experience recovery. And it's no exception when it comes to recovery from the addiction to drugs or alcohol. We are very grateful to have found what we believe is the premier facility to offer a Christian 12-step model of care. It treats the whole person and offers biblical values as the foundation for treating the mind, body, and spirit. Our partner in drug and alcohol addiction provides exemplary medical and psychiatric care, as well as Christian-based psychotherapy, pastoral counseling, biblical studies and meditation, educational groups, worship and prayer, and a Christian 12-step program. The approach is non-denominational and guides the patient to experience freedom through a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you or someone you love is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. That's 1-800-639-5433 or go to newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
I just absolutely believe in the mission of New Life, and I feel that the materials provided and the biblical counseling perspective is so valuable and not available in so many places. And New Life and membership in Club New Life provides access to the live program and also CDs available to listen to. So I know it's easy to turn on the radio and receive the benefit, but those services don't come without expense. And I would sure like to see the program remain on. So I would like to challenge listeners who listen and receive benefit but haven't yet given to actually give this year and continue the giving, of course, because more people need to hear.
Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE and ask how you can start your Club New Life membership today. 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to the program.
Hey, we're back. Hey, I got a question for John and Dave. You guys?
Yeah.
A lot of times you hear the advice given to a newly wedded guy, hey, don't take money from the father-in-law, or otherwise you've just entered into a business contract and you'll never get out, or man, he'll feel like he owns you for the rest of the marriage. If the only way he's going to feel like he owns you is if you succumb to the manipulation or the control that he would exert later.
Right.
Yeah, that's a battle inside the groom. Yeah. That's not a battle.
Yeah. So what you want to do is counsel the guy. Okay, take the money, make the down payment on the house, but be sure that you've got some really strong boundaries about what you're willing to do.
Well, also, but also there's a conversation there, Steve.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Joe, I can't tell you how much we appreciate it. We probably wouldn't be able to be getting to a place without this down payment. I'm sort of a stand-up guy about money and responsibility, though, so I just want to make sure that we're clear, if you're okay with this. This is a gift. There's no strings, and you've never been that way with me, but I'm just kind of careful about this.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? And the guy goes, oh, sure. I mean, it's just for you. Or he goes, well, you know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. Then you say, I think I got to hand it back.
Yeah. So kind of have a conversation like this father could have had with the uncle there. That's really good.
Yeah, or you make it a loan, then you just say, if on that, let's do a loan thing then.
All right.
That's what we did with my parents and my wife's parents. Both times we borrowed from them, it was a loan and paid them back.
Did you pay interest?
I don't remember. It was a long time ago.
I think the Bible teaches that it's okay for friends and relatives to give each other stuff, but I think that if you look at the passages on usury, in Proverbs, those should be no interest loans, or there was a business.
I think they were no interest loans, but I don't remember for sure.
And then the other thing is, don't ever loan a family member money unless you're willing to make that a gift.
Yeah,
right. So that you're not holding it against.
We did that with siblings.
Let's talk to Julie from Washington D.C. listening also on WAVA. What a great station! Great manager, Dave Ruhlman. Hello, Julie. Welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's going on,
Julie? Hi, Steve. Hi, guys. It's kind of good to talk to you. I met you back in 2006 when I wandered into your studio for a few minutes, and you gave me an an autographed book of Your Healing is a Choice, which is great.
Well, thank you.
I just wanted to say hello for that.
Hi.
I've been married a couple times, and my first husband, I was married to him for like 3 years, and then the second one, met him right after the first one. It was a complete, I guess, rebound now that I look back on it. And I don't think I vetted him very well. I'm not really sure how that happened, but, you know, he did and said all the right things, and he subsequently ended up living with a porn addict for the entire time we were together for the 12 years we were married. And we had three kids, and he had a son from a previous marriage that no longer speaks to him. And it was a very, very difficult time. He ended up, well, actually, while I was on that trip to meet you, he was home making phone calls to 900 numbers.
There you go.
That I found out when I got back. It was great. And anyway, so I think the thing is, ultimately, he ended up losing his job over it. And we lost our house. And that was kind of like the last of it for me. I felt like I could not trust him in any aspect. He just lied a lot. And so I've been out of this for about 3 years now, and I've dated, and I really, really have difficult trust issues, and, you know, and I kind of bounce back and forth between trying to figure out, well, how do I allow God to help fix this problem for me, because I was I was in charge of all the money, and I had to take care of everything. I'm a very fixer kind of personality, and God really taught me a lot about trusting him when I had to go through losing my house and not knowing where I was going to live, and he was out of a job and all those things. So I've learned how to lean on God a lot, but I want to know what direction to go to try to learn to trust, because a lot of times I go out and I meet people and I never even get a chance to hardly have them get to know me because I have all these barriers up, and, you know, and they're kind of anxious and they want more than I'm willing to give them. And, you know, it takes me a long time to trust people, and I don't know what direction to head to get past those trust issues to allow people to get to know who I am on the inside, because essentially no one gets to know me for me, or it's almost as like they won't take the time to get past all of this stuff that has just been there for a long, long time.
Okay.
What was your father like, Julie?
He was distant. He was there, but he wasn't, and anytime I wanted to spend time with him, I had to call him, and, you know, I had to initiate everything. He did not make any real initiative to do anything. And I can remember I asked him several years ago, but I was an adult, and I said, well, why didn't you spend more time with me when I was a kid, you know, do the every other weekend thing? He says, well, I just thought that, you know, you'd rather be spending time with your friends. And I said, well, don't you think you would have had a bigger impact on my life than my friends did? And he's like, well, hindsight's 20/20, but quite frankly, the relationship isn't really a whole lot different. You know, and he's always been the same. He always has that kind of same even keeled, you know, you never really see him flustered about anything. He's very, you know, and that's how my second husband was. He was kept facade about his whole perfect thing. There was no ups and downs in our relationship. You know, we never got upset about whether the ice cube trays were full, because there was this ugly thing underneath that he was always trying to keep a lid on. So we didn't have minor little tiny problems. We had these gigantic problems.
Yeah.
So now it's almost like, how do I have a relationship and deal with the ebb and flow of real people?
Well, what
they have real emotions when my husband was so...
One of the things that you need to work on will be some of the disappointments with your dad, but there's other parts of it too, in terms of you've got to have enough women around you that will help judge these guys, that you know help you judge, and use your word, to vet them, and women who know you and know the inside of you and are going to be honest with you about what goes on in your life. I'm not sure that's something that you've got going either.
Well, I do talk with my girlfriends a lot about it, but I can honestly tell you, I've dated, I've gone out with, tried to meet a lot of different types of people to see what really fits me after all this time. And one thing I've found over across the board is, you know, people in my age group, because I'm in my early 40s and they're divorced, we all have a lot of baggage, because we've all been through some pretty horrid stuff to end up divorced at the age we're at. So it's not just me that has the issues. Then you have all these other people on the other end of it that have their issues.
Let me give you a dating coaching tip, Julie. And that is, stick your toe in the water and be a tad vulnerable. And if he's good with it, you be a tad more vulnerable. And if he's not, you back off. You see, people in dating, especially if there's been like dad issues, like Dave mentioned, or a crummy marriage. You've had a couple of them. There's sort of this all or nothing thing inside that says, I just can't trust anybody, or I'm afraid that if I get involved with you, I'll be too vulnerable. And so you have to have what they call in psychology a process orientation. I'm going to have a great date, and we're going to talk about nothing but sports and, you know, I don't know, weather. And then I like the guy. And then my next date, I'm going to take a risk, and I'll talk about, I don't know, sometimes I get insecure that I don't look nice or I don't like my job or whatever. And if he gets weird about it, okay, that was it. But if he goes, yeah, that's tough, me too. So you stick your toe in the water over time, and you find out what the guy's made of. And people who have had nightmares in relationships find it to be very helpful.
Well, and I can ask you other questions, because it's my experience is that it doesn't seem to matter whether they are a worship leader or they are a guy that doesn't really go to church very often. They are very, very pushy, if you know what I mean.
Sexually?
And it's, yeah.
Well,
and
wait,
it's
whoa, Julie. That's not hard. That's not hard. You say no. And a good guy will go, yeah, I'm sorry, I should have put the brakes on, and you keep dating him. And if a guy goes victim or keeps pushing, you never see him again. Now, why is that hard?
Why is that hard?
To say what I said to say.
Huh?
Why is it hard to say what I just said to say?
Well, I think part of it is probably because, you know, it's hard to find good people to begin with, and it just seems like I've just dealt with that across the board. So I kind of have this, and you know, of course, my ex was, you know, all involved in pornography, and he's all kind of, and so I feel like that it's almost like normal for a guy to act that way, because they all act like that.
That's a mistake.
And how am I supposed to know that's not normal for a guy to act like that?
You call him on it.
They're all like that.
Are you around any healthy people?
Huh?
Are you like swimming in
the bottom of a sewer?
I have had
conversations with, literally, I'm not exaggerating, people who are worship leaders in church. They like do the worship mm-hmm. service.
Julie, stop for a second. You're kind of making these cases for catastrophe because you find some crazy guys out there, and there's a list of crazy girls out there too. But there's good, righteous guys out there who either don't have those bad values and have good values, or you can say, this is the kind of person I am, and they salute and they snap too. So don't give up on the gender and go into hopelessness. Mm-hmm. Be righteous around these guys. Don't hang in the sewer. Hang with good ones, and you get rid of the guys that aren't that good. I mean, don't get upset because you hear a lot of the bad guys out there. There's a lot of great Christian single guys out there. I'm going to get you to send you a copy of Henry's book, How to Get a Date Worth Keeping. It's got a lot of principles in there.
And I'm going to send you Avoiding Mr. Wrong.
Well, and some of the good guys are staying home because they get burned out too. So you got to do a little harder search.
True. We'll be back right after this for the final segment.
Hi, everybody. Max Licato here. As a pastor, I've seen how important it is for people to come and get good Christian counsel. People make decisions that turn out to be the wrong decision. I heard Steve Arterburn say on New Life not too long ago that the same thinking that got you into your mess isn't going to get you out of it. If you find yourself in a spot and you don't know what the next right thing to do is, then won't you call the good people at New Life? They have a network of Christian counselors around the country that's more than 850 strong. Call today 1-800-NEW-LIFE, that's 1-800-639-5433, and tell them you need to find someone to help you. They're likely to have a counselor in your area to help you with whatever you're struggling with. It will be good, godly counsel. Call today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 639-5433.
I counsel people every single day. I help marriages. I help broken people find healing. I teach the good news of a Savior that loves us. But why can't I accept it myself and break free from this bondage? I can't stop looking at pictures that I shouldn't be looking at, and fantasizing and lusting, and now I've taken it a step further and gone to a strip club. I have to stop. I want to stop.
At New Life, we've helped thousands of men just like this find hope, healing, and a plan to move forward with their lives through our one-of-a-kind Every Man's Battle Intensive Weekend. Call us right now at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
I need help, and I can't do this on my own. I want to be the pastor that God wants me to be.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
To find out more information about New Life, or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
All right, we are back. And, you know, sometimes you see people that it's all about that other thing, the men you can't trust and all that. And you get focused on that, and you don't have to deal with yourself then. You know what I'm getting at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what we were trying to help Julie with.
Yeah.
There's lots of great, cool guys and lots of great, cool gals. And if you say, gosh, I'm only fine, there are only the bad ones out there, then you got to say, where's my crazy magnet? Mm-hmm. Is it on my head? Is it on my forehead? I've got a crazy magnet mm-hmm. somewhere.
Yeah. All right. Our final call is going to be Carla, but right after Carla, we're going to do another program. So those of you on the line, please hang on. We'll get to your call then. Carla from Arlington, Virginia, WAVA. Hello there.
Hello. I just want a quick question. I've been married for 6 years, and this is my second marriage, and I have a 17-year-old girl going on 18, and last December my husband sexually harassed her, and she felt very uncomfortable. I notified the authorities and everything, but I'm a member of this church, and I'm very active in church, and he was also. And but now, since they took him out of the house, he's not working in church anymore, but people, I don't tell people what happened, but they like telling me all the time, if he did something wrong, you have to forgive him. And because you talk about forgiveness to others, which I did forgive him, but I don't know if I'm supposed to take him back, or do I have to take counseling, or it's okay just to divorce?
Well, Carla, forgiving is one thing, and yeah, you need to forgive him for your sake, but whether you take him back or not, or let him back in the house, has a lot to do with what he's done about the issue, and whether, you know, how he's shown repentance, made things right with the daughter, all kinds of other things, because reconciliation is a separate issue from forgiveness. You can do the forgiving regardless of what he does, but for you to reconcile, there has to be some real changes on his side of the scale as
well. Yeah, Carl, if a person murdered someone and they were in prison for life, and then they were sorry and they were forgiven, should they get out of jail?
They didn't take him to jail. I'm making charges on him.
It's a hypothetical.
They just gave counseling to my daughter because I didn't want any, you know, like alarm the church or anything.
What?
And I didn't want to do
Yeah, so you didn't broadcast
him.
What happened.
They just take him out of the house. They said that he has to move out.
Yeah. Okay. Carla?
And they asked me to press charges on him, but I did not.
Okay, here's our advice. Press charges, because he really hurt your daughter. He needs to be made accountable for that.
Yes.
And if he changes, and a good, healthy counselor who deals with these issues, and we'll send you some names, and if a good Christian counselor says he's changed enough, and it won't be anytime soon, he's got to change for a long time, let him back in the house after the counselor says it. That would be our advice.
Carla?
Uh-huh.
Carla?
Yes, I'm here.
They said to make him move out of the house, right?
Yes.
Now, let's just say for some reason he moves into the house that has a 17-year-old that's not his daughter.
Uh-huh.
Do you think she's safe?
No, I wouldn't let her stay by her. I mean, she would get Twin Everest to stay by herself with him.
Carla?
No, I wouldn't trust him anymore.
Carla, if you don't press charges, you may be the reason that another 17-year-old gets molested.
So
you have an obligation to other young girls to press charges against your husband so that this doesn't happen. A molester that gets away with something with simply moving out many times becomes more motivated to test the limits again.
Okay.
So if
how do I deal with this in church?
Well, you're just going to deal with it as it comes up. If someone says your husband, so you press charges against your husband, you say, yes, I sought counsel and I felt like they were right. This was the wisest, the most right thing for me to do.
Okay, but they don't know what happened. They don't need to tell them. Looking at me all the time without him.
Carla,
and they're like, oh, you know.
Carla, this is so far. Carla, this is so far more important, more serious than what your church people think.
Yeah. Hey, Carla, by pressing charges, what you're doing, it doesn't mean he's going to go to jail. He's going to be forced to get help. That's the reason you would press the charges, because the court will look at what happened, and depending on the seriousness of it, will say, you know, you got to do A, B, or C, you know, and if you don't do that, then you go to jail, and you know, this makes him accountable, so that he doesn't do it to somebody else, but also so that he has an opportunity to get the help, so that maybe you guys could get back together once your daughter has moved out and gotten on her own.
Yep. Okay. Well, I hope that's helpful to you, and we'll try to assist you in that in any way that we can. And I'm going to send you a copy of Walking Into Walls, and I hope that will be a blessing to you. You know, you may have some issues going on in your life that you want to share with other people. Maybe you've always dreamed of starting a group where your pain could have some kind of purpose and meaning. Well, if you call us and ask to talk with Ryan, he'll help you get just the right small group started in your church. We have so many things that you can start a group on, like depression, sexual addiction, manhood, weight loss, alcohol addiction, inappropriate laughing, marriage groups, grief, emotional healing, whatever it is that you could connect with your peers over. We've got that kind of group, and we'd love to tell you all about it. You find out by calling 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Also, you know, these are the dog days of summer, and before John shares scripture with us, I just want to invite you to support us. A lot of people go away in August, and we the support really drops off, and we need your help. You know, we're kind of on the fine line anyway, and we've made it through the summer so far, but August is tough. So if there is any way that you could make a one-time gift, we'll send you a copy of Walking Into Walls. Or maybe you could join Club New Life, and we'll send you a Life Recovery Bible, our way of saying thank you for supporting us on a monthly basis. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, that's 1-800-639-5433, or go to the website, the new website, newlife.com. John, share some scripture with us, please.
Steve, I was thinking about how much growth involves starting off with the pain of a person who causes us pain, then looking at ourselves, and that's the only way to grow. And I thought about 1 Corinthians 4. I was reading this morning before the show. It says that God will bring our darkest secrets to light and will reveal our private motives. Then he will give to each one whatever praise is due. Sometimes it may not be any praise, but that God is fundamentally interested in our hearts and our motives, and we need to be just as interested. So if someone causes us pain, we've got to deal with that. But we've also got to look and say, is my motive dark or is it light? Is it revenge? Is it being justified? Or is it growing and changing?
Very good. Thank you, John. Thanks for sharing that. Well, what a great challenge for all of us to check out and our motives and as we deal with other people today. We love you. We care about you. We were praying for you this morning in our devotional time at New Life. God bless you. Thanks for listening to us or watching us. Thanks to those who support us. Pray for us. Call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. We'd love to help you. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you. But you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1018, Laguna Beach, California, 92652. Please join us on Monday for New Life Live.